Welcome, everyone, to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Version 8 Security Concepts. My name is Kathy Kuhn, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide 2. In today's session, we will start by introducing the panel of experts to you. We will then move on to a brief introduction to the WebSphere Application Server Version 8 security concepts. Next, our panel of experts will answer 5 questions that they provided. After that, we'll open the lines for live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. On to slide 3. At this time, I would like to introduce our panel. Varun Talapragadeta has been in WebSphere Application Server support since February 2006. He is responsible for solving customer problems relating to WebSphere Application Server with specialization in various components including dynamic caching, session manager, web container, JSP, JSF, class loader, SIP, and security. Bill Holthauser has been involved with support in IBM for over 20 years and in WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support since 2003, working on multiple teams. Currently, he is on the security team. Ajit Jarwala has been in WebSphere Application Server support since 2000. He is responsible for solving customer problems related to WebSphere Application support with specialization in various components including security, dynamic caching, session management, web container, JSP, JSF, and class loader, and system management. Before we get to the question-and-answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview. Moving on to slide 4, and I will turn it over to Varun.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Varun Talapragada. We will be covering a number of questions related to the VA security concepts topics. The topics involved are dynamic outbound SSL configuration. I will cover that. And then Java 2 security will be covered by Bill. And then cross-cell communication, we talk about LTPA, and those two are covered by Ajit Jarwala. So the platforms covered will include all of the application server versions, 7.0, 8.0, 8.5, and 8.5.5. Moving on to slide number 5. The very first question is, what is dynamic outbound SSL and how to configure dynamic outbound SSL? We'll talk about that very briefly on where we can use it and how to configure it in the next slide. Going on to slide number 6. In normal circumstances for the WebSphere application server, for any outbound connection with an endpoint connected, we use a static SSL configuration. That means for any outbound endpoints, we use the same SSL configuration. So if we wanted to use a different SSL configuration for each endpoint, then this is the dynamic outbound SSL is the best option here, where you can have a different SSL configuration for each endpoint based on the host name, protocol, and the port. So, for example, if you wanted to have a different SSL configurations for when you connect to an endpoint, IBM.com versus an endpoint, bankofamerica.com, so you can have a different outbound SSL configuration setup so that the WebSphere will select these predefined SSL configurations that we define in the admin console. So ability to associate the SSL configurations dynamically is a part done by WebSphere, where when it will select from the predefined things based on the target host, port, or outbound protocols. So WebSphere basically it checks to see if the target host and port are matched when a predefined criteria is matched for a predefined criteria that includes the dynamic domain portion or the host. So these are all things can be done only when the IBM provided SSL socket factory is being used, and by any chance if any of the application uses the IBM SSL socket factory, if it has not been used, then this outbound connection, outbound dynamic outbound SSL configuration will not be picked. Moving on to slide number 7. So here is a place where if you go into the SSL certificate and key management and dynamic outbound SSL configuration, and you can give your dynamic outbound SSL configuration name there, and the scope we can select, and a little description, and then the connection information is very important. If you have, in this example, I selected IIOP is a protocol, and the host is www.ibm.com, and the port is 8815. So if any application that makes the endpoint connection with this connection information only gets picked by the dynamic outbound SSL and picked by the WebSphere, and this dynamic outbound SSL configuration will be used. So if you have, instead of IIOP, if you specify star and then IBM.com and 8815, so that means any protocol that comes in with IBM.com as a host name and a port of 8815 will be that can pick this configuration that you specify in SSL configuration part of the same page. So if you have star, 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 that means any outbound connection with any of the host, port, and protocol can pick this information. So I will turn it over to Bill for the next question. Moving on to slide number 8, please.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining. The questions that we're putting together today are ones that Varun, Heath, and myself came up with based on some of the problems that we worked on. And I work a lot in the Java 2 security area, and so this question was seen in multiple PMRs, where what are the policy files that are used for Java 2 security and WebSphere application server? And it's because it's plural, there's more than one, so it gets complex. So if we can go on to page number 9, we'll talk about that a little bit. You can see here that the java.policy file, the server policy, are ones that you might expect pretty quickly when you read up a little bit about Java 2 security. But then after that, it starts getting into specifics about the way WebSphere has implemented things. SPI policy, the app policy, library policy, WAS policy, they're all ones that are really just there for WebSphere. And the RA, the resource adapter, one is actually very unique. Not very many people end up coding that. But usually the typical ones in WebSphere we're going to see are the ones with the asterisks, the WAS.policy and the app.policy. The java.policy is going to be there every time because that's always there in the JRE, but the ones that are modified and edited for WebSphere purposes are the app.policy and the WAS.policy. So we'll go on to slide number 10. There's another question that I get a lot. When Java 2 security is enabled, what does that mean for WebSphere and what's restricted? So WebSphere will give itself, anytime it needs, once this Java 2 security is enabled, it will give itself permission to do whatever it needs to function. So inside of WebSphere, there is code that tries to make these permissions correct. So if you turn on Java 2 security, sometimes if there would be a bug in some of this code, it would fail. So they actually have to go through and make this stuff work too. But then if you look at what else is restricted, the EJBs don't have any access to the file system. Servlets don't have access to the files in the WAR. You know, other API calls like this get user principle one is used a lot in security are blocked. So it's really cutting down on what that process can do with what would be called system resources. So Java 2 security protects WebSphere from the apps and any apps from each other. If we go to page 11. Question number three. And that what variables can be used in the WAS.policy and app.policy when you're trying to put together any kind of changes that you need for your environment or your application, you need to know what those, you can use these for convenience because otherwise it gets pretty long-winded about putting in what you have to put in there to make the policy file complete. And so these variables, all the ones with the dollar signs and the left and right curly braces, come in real handy when you're actually making an update to a policy file. You can see the application installation location, the module location, what cell you're in, what node you're in, the server name, and you can see that there are other JVM system variables that can be used, like you can see the user.install.root/etsy is a handy one as well, especially when you're talking about some of the SSL stuff. And I guess we'll go on to the next slide. Slide 13 should be question number four, and that will be turned over to Ajit.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I come up with this question is because we get a lot of questions in the PMR, and this scenario is very commonly used in a lot of customers have a setup. So I thought that if I come up with this question, you know, I'll give you some background, you know, how you can configure as a best practice. You know, there are different type of SSO, you know, like obviously Spinego SSO, SAML SSO, but this one is mainly talks about like a CSIBD protocol. So if you have a two-cross cell that you want to communicate over a single sign-on, you know, and this is what I'm going to explain here. So if we go to the slide number 14, please. So what is a CSIBT? It's a common secure interoperability protocols. Obviously, first you have to know what you are doing in your environment. Otherwise, you can easily mess it up and can cause a lot of problems. So first you have to identify how to configure inbound and outbound in your topologies, you know. So you have to know which server is acting as a client, which server acting as a server. If you not know, then obviously you have no idea, you know, how the communication is flowing. So the different type of authentication, you know, obviously servlet and EJB. So there are web authentications and EJB authentications. So for the web authentications, we support the three types authentications, like the basic authentications, form-based authentications, certificate authentications, and if you are an EJB, then obviously it goes through the EJB CSIV2. Out of the box, you know, basically the default authentication is basic authentication that use user ID and a password to perform the authentications at the CSIV2 layers. You know, and you can do identity assertions and also the Java client certificate authentication, but those are like a default, but you can implement it. You know, it's not that you cannot configure it, you know. But like I say, you know, you still have to know, you have to find out how is your infrastructure is set up and what type of authentications you want to implement, you know, that kind of stuff. Obviously, when you're doing the configurations, you know, obviously you need to know the client and server. There are like two options, CSIV2 inbound and outbound configurations. at the global level, and obviously at the security domains level. So, you know, in I would say that if specific applications and specific JVM is going to do the authentications, then go ahead and set it up as a security domain, because by configuring with the security domains, you have a more leverage, you know, your environment, and you can control it, you know. But if you have a very single environment, like a very single profile, and you want to do the cross sell, then you don't need a security domain. You can just configure it at the global level, then you'll be fine, you know. So I have a link in the presentations, the IBM Knowledge Center, and in this link, it basically explains a lot of good information about the cross-sell configurations. You know, there are examples like configuring the basic authentications and identity assertions. And then example two is like configuring the basic authentication, identity assertion, and client certificate. And then the third one is the configuring the client certificate authentication and run as system. And then obviously the fourth one is if you don't want an SSL and if you just want to have a TCP/IP transport authentication, then example four basically explains how to do that. You know, so let's go to the slide number 15, please. So what I have done in slide number 15 is I'm just kind of showing you that single profile. So if you just have like the base or even 2ND installed, but you just have only single profile, you know, and cell A and cell B, you know, there are a lot of factors here. You know, people get confused. You know, I see there's so many key.ptrl and so many trust.ptrl. Which one I need to use? You know, I mean, and if you have more than like 100 nodes, obviously it gets more complicated, you know. So you have to know what you are doing, you know, and you have to you know, make a good documentation that you are dealing with this key store or you are dealing with this trust store or things like that, you know. The common for SSO, need to have a same LDAP. I mean, you can have a different LDAP, but then it gets a little complicated. Then you would have to have configure same realm name, and then you have to have a inbound trusted realm configure. A lot of times, a lot of customers forget, you know, that piece of the configuration, and they don't make the same realm name. And if they don't make the same realm name, then they see exceptions, you know, in their logs because the server is not communicating each other because there's a mismatch LM, mismatch LTPA key between cell A and cell B. So, like I say, you know, you have to be very careful when you're dealing with cross cell and configuring stuff, you know. So let's go to the slide number 16, please. So in the slide number 16, I'm just kind of showing you that if you have a network deployment topology with the multiple nodes, like node 1, node 2, you know, in cell A and then cell B, you know, just imagine, you know, that each app server has their own key store and trust store, you know. So which one to use? Well, if you're doing the cross cell, and obviously the both end, the security is enabled to protect your environment, so obviously out of the box, we do the SOAP communications between cell A and cell B over a secure channel. So obviously you would have to extract the certificate from cell B and cell A, vice versa, you know, and then exchange the signer. Otherwise, if you don't have that, then obviously you're going to get an exception, maybe the no certificate trusted found or something, you know, that kind of stuff. And obviously, I would recommend, or at least, you know, have a same LDAP configured between cell A and cell B. But you can have a different LDAP. You know, it's not that you cannot. But you know. So let's go to the slide number 17, please. Okay, so we're going to talk about the question number 5. What is an LTPA key, and how to prevent LTPA key from becoming out of sync or corrupted. We get this type of PMR so many in a queue. So the LCPA is basically it's an IBM authentication protocols that was developed a long time ago, it supports a single sign-on from the out of the box. And when you're dealing with the single sign-on, obviously you need to have the same DNS domain. If not, then obviously the single sign-on is not going to work, and it supports the forwardable credential. And the LCPA job is to encrypt the token and then decrypt the token, So in a cross-sell, if you are authenticating and creating an LCPA token that you want even to pass to the remote server in your HTTP header, obviously you need to have a same key to decrypt that token. If you don't have a same key, how are you going to decrypt your token, there is no brainer on that, So you need to have a same key to be decrypted. So a lot of times we see in a PMR that the key gets out of sync or key gets corrupted, then obviously the single sign-on breaks. So the first thing you want to do is you want to export the LCPA key from your cell A and cell B and try to compare it. And if it's matched, then you know that you have a good LCPA key. If not, then obviously that's where the problem is, that you need to be investigated. Earlier in WAS, I don't know why, but in earlier we had it, the feature was enabled as a default that LCPA key would get created after X number of days, and that was creating a lot of problems in a cell, like a synchronizing the key would break with the node, and the node would fail to synchronize, and also when the security is enabled, a lot of MBINs are protected. So MBINs, when you try to like stop the server or maybe something you are doing through the console, then you get an exception like access denied because that MBIN didn't have a credential thread on that thread ID. So it won't allow you to access that resource because the MBINs are protected. So you'll see those kind of stuff in the logs, So those kind of like a basically normal. It's not a defect related. It's just that something went out of the roof regarding the security, and that basically broken or maybe, like that. So in that case, if you stop your entire cell and then start one at a time, maybe like a D manager and maybe running the manual sync from the each node, and try to refresh a token, 99.9% of the time, you get back to your normal working environment. But there are some cases that may not, and in that case, obviously, you need some more debug required, That's all I have it for right now. I think we can open up for line of the questions.
I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. And now it's time to move on to the live Q&A session.
We've received our first question from Bastar Ayala.
Hi. Thank you for the presentation. I have a question on the LTPA keys. I think they are stored in a file that ends as .jcks. So my question is there a command or something that I can use to read the file and list out the keys stored in that file, please?
Hi. Thanks for the questions. And, you can open IKEYMAN, IKEYMAN tools to open that file, but you can just kind of look at it, which version of the LTPA key pair and secret are in a file. But in order to see the actual key, I think it's the best thing to do is from the console, if you export it out into like a text file, then you can see your public key, private key, and the shared key, you know, and then you can compare it between cell A and cell B, you know.
Okay, thank you.
We have received another question. Your line is open.
Hi. Hey, thanks for the presentation. I have a quick question. So regarding the cross-cell communication, once we export a certificate from one cell, to which floor we need to import that to the final certificate?
Right. So thanks for the questions. In a cross-cell environment, if we are talking about, like, you know, the two cells, so usually out of the box, all the certificates is centrally managed. You know, so let's say you have a cell B and cell A. So if you extract the certificate from the cell B, you can add it into, or you can import it into cell A as a signer certificate into the cell default trust store as a signer certificate.
Okay. So when you export from cell B, can you tell me, you know, is there any way from the console that we can export this certificate?
You can use if you go under cell default trust store, there is an option called retrieve from the port. So you can put the remote host name of your cell where the deployment manager or maybe the single profile, the host name, and then the SOAP port to retrieve it directly without exporting and importing.
Okay.
Does WebSphere support cross-domain single sign-on? If so, what are the available solutions?
I think the answer is no. It does not support the cross-DNS single sign-on. It has to be in the same DNS domain.
As a follow-up to the cross-domain single sign-on question that we had, so it won't support even through SAML?
Yeah, I think the SAML authentication is something is different than cross-cell. You know, I think the configuration and setup a little different as far as my understanding. But I'm not sure, to be honest, whether if that supports a cross-domain or not.
The next question comes from Bagru. We see lots of these messages in our logs. SECJ0371W, validation of the LTPA token failed because the token expired with the following info. This is token expired date and has brackets with nothing in it.
Right. So I think that's it's a very typical because the LTPA, when you see in the logs a warning message, that means the token is expired. So the end user has to re-challenge or re-authenticate it in order to refresh the token. But there is a tech note, we have it out there, which explains how you can prevent that warning message. You know, and if you can send me an email, I can try to send you that tech note after these meetings, you know. So you have my email address in this presentation, so go ahead and send me an email and I will reply back to you.
Slide number 3, yeah.
Okay, so this is what's on the web canvas right now is the slide number 3 with the panel's email address. From Charlie, a question in the group chat. We have a company signed SSL certificate. What is the best way to import this for ISIM 6.0 into WAS 8.5.5.2 so that it replaces the existing IBM certificate?
Yeah, so if you have an internal the CA certificate that was signed, and if you want to use that certificate, then first thing you have to know that which key store you are requesting the certificate request. You know, and from that, you can receive that certificate, and then you can definitely use your company signed SSL certificate. You don't have to use the out-of-the-box, the self-signed default. But when you're dealing with that, make sure that once you imported a certificate or once you received it, then you have to set the certificate alias for an outbound or the inbound. Otherwise, if you have more than one keys into the key database, then WebSphere will not understand which one to use. You know, it will try to use it the first one in the list, I believe. But you have to map the certificate alias for either an outbound or the inbound.
At this time, we do have a question from Todd. Your line is open.
Okay. The question I was trying to ask earlier was, we have a developer that wants to administrate his MDB to stop and start a listener using JMX in his application. Can this be limited to one JVM in the cell, or is the admin operator authority only at the cell level?
So thank you for the questions. If I understand correctly, you have a standalone Java client, you know, which is a JMX that's trying to talk to the server, and you
it's actually the application is running in that server. So you have a message-driven being an application that runs, that's communicating with MQ, and he wants to be able to stop and start his listener using the JMX.
Yeah, I think you have to use an admin client, JMX API, to do that using the servlet, because the JMX, the application is running on the web container, you know. So
exactly.
I think it's an admin client. You have to use that API.
So my question is related to security, though, is we see the authority as being either administrator or operator as far as the
yeah, you have to have an administrator role.
Can that role be limited to that one JVM in the cell, or is that going across all the JVMs in the cell if I give that authority to them?
I think we need to look at the fine-grained security model in version 8. I think that's possible, but I think we probably should do a little research to get the details back.
All right. Well, we have a PMR open. I thought it was a great opportunity to ask the question. But I did remember in 8.5, and we're on 8.5.5.2, that there was fine-grained security, and I wasn't sure if we could limit it to the JVM or not.
Yeah, I think the bill said the fine-grained, I think that would probably be good options, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question is around Java 2 security. I was wondering if you could tell us, is there a particular, you know, what the overhead is for turning on Java 2 security?
Well, that's a good question, and it varies with the different versions, different implementations of WebSphere. If you were trying this back in WebSphere version 6.1, for instance, especially in the early fix packs, there was some performance improvements done that made it less of an issue. But it's one of those things that for security specifically, it's kind of a balance between functionality and usability and security and so forth. And if you have made something absolutely secure, then nobody would be able to use it, because that would be the only way you could be sure, is if nobody could use it. But so the framework of the Java 2 security, when you enable it, I'm pretty sure I have a document that we got from some of our testing performance groups that I could send to you. But in the final mix, you do incur, I think it was somewhere under 10% now, where it was more than that in version 6.1 once you enable Java 2 security.
Do you find most shops have Java 2 security enabled, or the opposite?
The opposite. I would say if you just use 100% of our customers as a function or a reference, I'd say less than 10% of what I see of the customers are actually trying to enable Java 2 security. And of those 10%, let's say 5% of the population, they're just trying to enable it because somebody told them that their system had to have Java 2 security enabled, and they don't really... If they argued with them, they could get an exception. And so really probably only 5% of our customers or thereabouts really need it on for the reasons of you know, one application protected from another, if they're third-party applications, and you ensure that, you know, the one doesn't have access to the other one and so forth. It's a real slim percentage of our users that actually really need it and really get it implemented.
Thank you.
Yep.
I don't see anything else in the group chat. I'd like to pass the presentation back over to Bill for the summary remarks.
Okay, well, earlier we talked about the dynamic outbound with Varun, Job 2 security with me, cross-sell and LCPA stuff with Ajit. In the end, security is a complex topic. There's a lot of things that we worked on outside of these scopes, so we have a lot of material that we could cover in another one of these type of Ask the Experts. But the dynamic outbound security SSL stuff, personally, I see a lot of calls on that. It works, you know, in the sense of you have maybe four or five options about how you might want to configure SSL. It works for a lot of customers because it's at the administrator level where the web server admin is the one that's making the choices. For instance, if you had a web service, you might want to say that we want to use the policy files to control, you know, what this web service is going to have access to and things like that. If you had, you know, a well-defined environment and it was more of a singular application in that environment, you could survive and work well with the you know, the static policies that WebSphere comes out of the box with. So, you know, hopefully we helped somebody today with that topic. And the Java 2 security stuff, it gets pretty deep in a hurry. Only a few of our customers are using it, and almost every time, unless they're experts at it themselves, they ended up giving us a call or two about just trying to get their environment up and running because, you know, it does have a lot of nuances, like in the policy file. If you so much as put an extra tab in the policy file with the wrong kind of editor, you know, the policy file doesn't get parsed correctly and things like that. So hopefully we've actually had some APARs in the past to fix some of those problems, but hopefully we help somebody today with that too. The cross-sell stuff that Ajit had worked on and talked about, you know, the LTPA stuff is proprietary. It's IBM. We can use Domino. We can use, you know, Data Power, LTPA tokens. But in the end, it's what they call a synchronous type of arrangement with LTPA where it's the same key used to encrypt it and the same key used to decrypt it. And as long as you have the same key, and the same mechanics, the same restrictions as far as if you're using, you know, an Active Directory or an LDAP environment where you have it in the same domain, you can end up with a very easy and highly robust and very much an enterprise solution kind of thing for your single sign-on where you don't have to go out and buy a third-party product to make all this stuff work. So I think that about covers what we did. Hopefully, if you have any questions, you can go ahead and email us, and we'll try and see if we can answer them.
Thank you, Bill, for a great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Experts session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you, and we appreciate your participation.